First, a look at the difference between health and health care.
America spends more than any other country on health care, but when it comes to health, our next guest says the U.S. isn't seeing a full return on its investment.
Back in 2011, two public health researchers published an op-ed in the New York Times laying out that paradox and explaining that there's a lot more to health than just the health care.
After getting an overwhelming response to their article, they've published a book called The American Healthcare Paradox, Why Spending More is Getting Us Less. The authors are Elizabeth Bradley and Lauren Taylor. Elizabeth Bradley joins us now. She's a professor of public health at Yale and director of the Yale Global Health Initiative. Elizabeth, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much, Cynthia.
So explain the paradox to us. How much more does America spend on healthcare? And how less healthy are we compared to other industrialized countries?
Great. Yeah, we spend double what the average other high-income country spends on a per capita basis. So where we might spend about $8,000 per capita on healthcare, other countries that are at our same income level really might spend $3,500, $4,000 per capita. That might be okay, except when you look at our outcomes are truly not as good. So, for instance, our maternal mortality rate is 6 times as high as in Sweden. Infant mortality rate's very high. And it's not just these public health outcomes. It's also some of the medical outcomes, such as our prevalence of heart disease, our prevalence of adult-onset diabetes. These are also our disability rates are higher than these other countries.
Hmm. Why is that?
We have a lot of different hypotheses for why this might be, but the one that is novel and the one that empirically seems to be coming forward strongly in this book is really the way we spend our money for healthcare. When we compare the United States to the rest of the world that are high income as we are, we actually spend a lot less in the area of social services. We are using a medical care system to really address some of the social, economic, behavioral challenges in our society, which are the real determinants of these health outcomes. We spend the vast majority of our money on the healthcare system and less in the areas of education, nutrition, support, housing, safe parks, etc. And the other countries that we compare ourselves to and want to compare ourselves to are doing just the opposite. They're actually spending more in those other sectors and much less than we are in healthcare, and they're getting better outcomes.
So draw the link for us, maybe a little bit more specifically. How can investing dollars towards social programs lead to better health?
You know, a good example of this is how we open the book with Joe. Joe is a person who is a 28-year-old with onset diabetes, and he doesn't have good housing situation at all. In fact, he enters his house every day from the backyard of a that's quite swampy, doesn't have the right shoes, etc. And he ends up living a life with poor nutrition, not great employment, has a few amputations. In the end of the day, he spends about $35,000, $40,000 on health care due to these intensive, very poor outcomes from diabetes. And we contrast that to some of the early interventions that could have been done. A good pair of shoes that would have kept his feet dry cost $50. So when we look at some of the fundamental ways that we keep people healthy, if we underinvest in those ways, it can end up landing in our healthcare system and ultimately creating enormous medical bills.
Why do we have such a division between healthcare and social services in the United States, do you think?
Such a good question. And we do spend a fair amount of time looking at the history. These are two sectors that have grown up completely independent from each other. And if we look today, very often the way the American medical care system is structured, it really has the concept of individualism. I myself go to a doctor, I have a one-on-one relationship, and that doctor will help me. And it is sort of very aligned with the American values of individualism. When we look at our social service sectors, they tend to be more aligned with the voice in America that is more collective, that looks at sort of how a society generally will use its resources to help the most people. And these attitudes, the values, the actual institutions that have developed are they're quite different. I think they play very much on sort of America's first voice and America's second voice. You know, the first we're most comfortable with is a really individualism model, and the Second, we're less comfortable with, but is critically important, is a more social and collective model. And the two just are not, they're not working in a coordinated way in our society now.
And we continue to hear debate even nationally about how to handle not just the healthcare system, but things like government assistance programs. And there's a lot of calls to reduce government spending in that way. What role do you think the government has in facilitating these types of systems that you're talking about?
One of the exciting things we found in the book were actually a whole set of experiments that are being done with, certainly the government is enabling them, but not strictly as government programs. These are delivery systems, they're agencies in communities that have come together really integrating some private sector models, some nonprofit sector models, and really community development. Certainly the government has to be enabling, the government has to have some kind of role. But however we tackle this integration of these two will have to be done in an American way. It will have to build, I think, to be sustained in our culture. It will have to build on the great entrepreneurialism and the great spirit of innovation we have that comes out of both our private sector and our nonprofit sector.
Does the Affordable Care Act address the problem sufficiently in your mind?
It's a beginning. It's a great beginning. One thing that's great about the Affordable Care Act is it will ensure everybody so explicitly and transparently will see, as an American culture, what are we spending on health care. Right now, there are a lot of hidden costs that we just can't budget for, we can't plan for, we can't rationalize. If we really ensure everyone will understand the true cost of our health care system, it also sets a platform in which some of the new agencies, which are growing up right out of a private sector and nonprofit sector, those agencies now will be accountable for a population and their health. And if we do it right, I think there's great hope this legislation could provoke greater coordination between medical care and the social services. We'll have to see if we actually implement it that way.
Well, because health care may not be the most important factor of health, should the money for the Affordable Care Act be spent on other social services?
A lot of people have asked us this question, and just to get the facts, you know, when we look at some of the most devastating diseases, colon cancer, stroke, heart disease, adult onset diabetes, 70, 80, 90% of these cases are really socially determined. They're determined by our behavior. They're determined by the environment we work on. They're not determined by medical care. So that tells us we have to pay attention to these other determinants of health. Now, should that be done by the healthcare system, or should that be done by some of these other sectors? That, I think, can be varied depending on the community, depending on the leadership in the community. You could imagine an accountable care healthcare organization that thought heavily about the social determinants of health because it was in its best interest to worry about mental health, obesity, smoking, housing, education among the population it's in charge of, you know, whose health it's accountable for. So I think it could really work either way.
We're talking with Elizabeth Bradley. She's the co-author of The American Healthcare Paradox, Why Spending More is Getting Us Less.
And we'd like to hear from you. Do you have questions or comments on the way that healthcare and social services are delivered, funded, and organized in the United States? Do you think there's more involved in making people healthy than just the healthcare itself? Are you involved in some kind of outreach trying to bring health education, health information to people inside or outside of the healthcare system? We'd like to hear your experiences and your thoughts. You can call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send us an email. That's talk@WPR.org.
We're continuing our conversation with Elizabeth Bradley about the American healthcare paradox.
And we'd like to hear from you. Why do you think the United States, as our guests say, spends more on healthcare but gets worse outcomes? Do you think there's more to healthcare, to being healthy, than just the healthcare? And what do you think about the way healthcare and social services are seen in the United States, are funded, organized, and delivered? You can join us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org.
Elizabeth, you said earlier that spending more on health care doesn't lead to better health results, according to your studies. But where is the money going that we're putting into health care?
We do get a lot of outstanding outcomes. And in fact, if you think about it and take a look at the data, some of our outcomes in certain areas are much better than other places in the world. So what are those? Those are things like the number of people living with a kidney transplant, more than any other country. How about being able to see a diabetes specialist within 6 months of being, accelerating in your disease? We are faster to get somebody to a specialist than any other country. Hip replacements, the number of MRIs we have per million people, the frequency with which we give catheterizations for angioplasty. These kinds of highly technical medical care responses, the U.S. dominates. And these give us good and important outcomes. We wouldn't want to lose that. The question is, can we get that, and can we still have a mind to some of the broader determinants of health that really are sort of the bread and butter that keep us healthy? And that's where we don't probably have the mix exactly right. If we look at other countries, we're unable in those other areas to achieve what they're able to.
Well, in fact, you compare the U.S. to Scandinavia in your book. What are some of the comparisons and contrasts?
Well, there are a lot of differences in how Scandinavia really organizes their health and social services, and more importantly, how their populace understands their own health. In Scandinavia, which when I say that, we visited Sweden, Norway, and Denmark, which are the social democracies of Scandinavia. And in these countries, there really is a conception of health that is the whole conception of health, that we want to be healthy in order to have a good life, to be able to have our vacations, to be able to work healthily, to have a good family, et cetera, that they see it as on the way to achieving, well-being overall, which is quite different from in the United States, where very frequently we'll drive by a billboard that says, your health is everything. Like, the specifics of your health is every last thing. It doesn't matter what else. You have to meet these standards of health. It's a very different conception of what makes you healthy and what health is. In addition, the way they organize their services is quite different. They organize at a county level, where they are budgeting for their social services and their medical care services as a single global budget that's transparently debated and thought through. How much do we spend where to get the biggest bang for the buck? And that's different. They have a more integrated way to look at it, which I think very much reflects that broader conception of how one creates a healthy population.
Let's take a call from Carrie in Milwaukee. Hi, Carrie.
Hello. There's so much to talk about here. It's just amazing. It's a great conversation. I'm a physical therapist. I work in the inner city of Milwaukee. And I totally hear what you're saying about social services. We wind up being the food pantry, the clothing store. We wind up helping people get immediate shelter if they're in an abusive relationship, because all of these things affect what we're doing. We've got patients who have, they're wearing shoes that are two sizes too small, and they're diabetic, or they have horrible nutrition. Nobody's ever sat down and talked with them about nutrition. They're 300 pounds, and they have knee pain. Well, we can work on their knee pain, but if nobody's helping them work on these other things, then our money that we're spending towards helping them with their knee pain is wasted. So we have a whole global approach at our clinic, and we see that it works much better.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call, Carrie. What are your thoughts on that, Elizabeth?
Oh, I think it's absolutely 100% true what Carrie has said, and we heard it again and again from clinicians. And both ways, both the ways in which clinicians were really focusing their time on these. And in fact, we know from our RWJ report that actually physicians generally say that one out of every six of the prescriptions they write, they'd like to write for a social service. It's that intensive that this is something they really see as being fundamental to keeping their patients healthy. We also saw the other side of this, where frontline providers became frustrated with it just because they're trained in medicine and they need to be the clothing store, as Carrie has said. And they don't always feel that they can actually do their jobs unless they're in one of these communities where there has been good coordination. So, in fact, the medical care providers, for instance, are able to very simply and easily understand what the shelter system is in that town or that community, or what the food pantry is, or the Meals on Wheels, et cetera. And in those kinds of communities, you really, I think, felt the joy of clinicians that they could look holistically, assigning sort of the right kind of interdisciplinary staff to the right kind of problem. What we often see, unfortunately, though, is the isolated clinician that is sitting there with the problem, knowing this is not medical, and just frustrated and, you know, depressed that they can't themselves use their trade to make this patient healthy.
Well, has the medical community evolved in a way that invests more training in these areas for new healthcare providers?
It's a good question. I think that we're seeing a panoply of types of providers that are starting to move into this area. Clearly nursing, you know, fundamental physical therapists such as Cary, social workers, physician's assistants, primary care physicians. But we do face the problem in the United States where our medically trained people, medical physicians, do tend to go into the specialties. And if we look at the United States compared to our other high-income countries, we have a lower percentage of primary care physicians than many of these countries. And studies have shown that really, at the end of the day, hurts us in terms of some of these primary care outcomes. So I think there are a whole set of experiments happening, but we probably need more in that area.
Brett from Richland Center is waiting for us. Hi, Brett.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the air. I kind of have a question and a comment. You just mentioned experiment. I'm a study coordinator with a project called the Active Aging Research Center. It's a federal grant given to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, 5 years, we're in year three. And our purpose was to develop some technology and see if it can help older adults in particular be able to remain in their homes and independent. I'm actually just coming home from a home visit right now. We're doing a randomized control study, and it's just been very interesting with this project to kind of see that firsthand. And I'm in a rural area. It's also going on in Milwaukee and Waukesha to get different kind of demographic perspectives. But one of the things with this project, when we started out, we wanted to see what assets the community has to be able to kind of use that to kind of support itself. And here in a rural area, we found so much of this doing. We have doctors that are connected in the community, and we found out that the social support, informal and formal, is so important to have in place. I work in the Aging and Disability Resource Center here, and they're kind of making it a challenge to not only provide services, but also give back and get connected to a community. And they've been able to then get people connected, because I read in a study in AARP, people who are lonely and isolated, which often as people age, it becomes more of a reality, the more they're connected, the better their health outcomes and quality of life will be. So it's just been really interesting with this study, seeing how technology can help facilitate that and help with that. But I also have a question for you. With that, do you think doctors are connected enough with communities or see that as an asset to help people become healthy? So we provide services, but how often are we really seeing the community's assets and as doctors or hospital organizations putting efforts towards that to really holistically provide for people in a community setting?
Such a great question. And first, I think it really is important what you're doing. And the field of aging has really led in these areas because, exactly as you said, gerontology and geriatricians really understand the idea that, as you said, the social support can make a huge difference for people who are older. We have a great story in the book about a woman who was terribly lonely and called the ambulance every 2 weeks. She ended up, not because she was sick, but she was lonely. And so the ambulance would bring her to the hospital. Of course, you get to the hospital, you're an older person, you are going to have a full workup. She ended up spending $30,000, $40,000 a year on this, when really she needed a different kind of thing. She needed adult daycare, or she needed a home care worker. Maybe she needed a technological connection with somebody. So I wholeheartedly agree with what you're doing, and I hope your study will come out positively. In terms of our doctors connecting up, we found some really exciting areas in which this was happening, in Santa Monica, in Seattle. I think there are pockets where this is really happening, but not enough. And you got to sort of, I think, from a physician's point of view, it's a funny thing because I think you get so overwhelmed with what's coming through the door that it almost, even though you know it would be better to step back and make the connection so that ultimately there could be some prevention, where do you get started? So I think this is something that, you know, we're hoping the book will shine a light on this. So at the end of the day, it's easier for everybody in some ways. As you said, the community assets are the fundamental assets, and it's not clear we're using them to the best way we can, and wouldn't it be a shame if we're spending a ton of money in the medical care system and then kind of wasting community assets that, if coordinated, we could leverage.
Elizabeth, you presented these findings of your studies and some suggestions for improving the healthcare system and the social services that that complement our health. What obstacles are you running into in terms of getting those suggestions implemented?
That's a good question. Well, I think it's always hard when you're trying to raise awareness about something. One of the things is that we can't just come at this from revising the medical care system or a government system or social services. People also have to sort of understand and adjust expectations about what a medical care system does for one. And that's hard for all of us. You know, we all would rather, you know, pull on the diet pill than actually go out and get exercise. So this is a hard message, I think, for all of us to promulgate and for people to absorb. And that is true in any kind of culture shift. So that's one issue. The other issue that really needs to be talked about is the truth is we have a very profitable medical care system. And it's 18% of the largest economy in the globe. This is the largest industry in our world. And it benefits a lot of people financially and also, you know, for those who are looking for high technology specialty care are benefiting. And we're used to it. It's our habit now. We've been building this system heavily since the 60s. And it's tough for people to imagine it being different and potentially being fearful of what could happen in the long run to their own income stream. This is something we do have to talk about. And, you know, is there a way to do this that can be a bit win-win? That's what we'd look for.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Bradley is a professor of public health at Yale and director of the Yale Global Health Initiative. She's a co-author with Lauren Taylor of The American Healthcare Paradox, Why Spending More is Getting Us Less.